That's the sound of Grammy Award-winning musician and producer Adrian Quesada's latest project, Boleros Psicodélicos. Now, Quesada is known for his work as part of the band Black Pumas, as well as his fearlessness when it comes to blending genres, cultures, and language in his music. Quesada joined us to discuss his most recent album, inspired by the psychedelic baladas movement of the 1960s and 70s, which blended traditional bolero music with the modern sounds of rock and roll, soul, and funk. In the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, Quesada set out to produce an album inspired by these revolutionary sounds of Latin America's past with the help of talented collaborators.
I had just been inspired by the first moment I heard something like this, but 2 decades of wanting to make it and then 2 years of making it during the pandemic was 2020 when everything went away. I finally had time to do it, and not only was it, you know, that I actually had time to do it and was inspired, but it was also what ended up kind of keeping me sane for a while when those first couple of months of the pandemic were, you know, I think everybody was excited about having all this new free time and taking on hobbies and riding bikes and baking bread and cleaning the house. And then 3rd or 4th months, all of a sudden started to get a little bit heavy, and everybody was kind of unsure about whether anything was ever going to go back to normal. And this was also what just kind of kept me sane through it all, you know.
So for others who don't know about psychedelic balada music, talk to us about the era from which it comes, the places from which it comes in, and why when you heard it 2 decades ago, you were like, this is something I ultimately want to be able to do.
The title Boleros Psicodélicos. So boleros are essentially ballads, and it's a very traditional old song form that originally came from Spain through Cuba to Mexico to all over Latin America. And it's a very beautiful song style and form that is a little more traditional, as a bolero is more acoustic and sometimes vocal harmonies and these really lush vocal arrangements. But it's very much music that is kind of almost folky in terms of you can just play it with a guitar. And, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s with the balada movement and the bands basically across Latin America were taking this song form that, you know, that everybody was familiar with and taking the influence from, you know, what was happening at the time very much was in late 60s, the psychedelic kind of revolution. And you can hear influence of some rock and roll. You can hear influence of some soul and some funk music. And it's just fascinating to me. Well, when I first heard it over, like you said, 2 decades ago, I didn't know that this existed. I didn't know that this kind of interpretation of that music was out there. When I, you know, what I heard as a kid growing up on the border was boleros were in a very traditional sound. And when I heard this, I'm like, oh my God. And I mean, before they started singing, it sounded like a hip hop song to me. You know, I just couldn't tell what it was. I was like, what is going on here? And then the guy started singing. I was like, oh, this is a bolero. What is happening here? It was weird. It was the craziest thing. It just completely blew my mind. And I just got obsessed forever and ever. It was something that I think since I've discovered that probably influenced everything I've ever done musically.
Wait, pause. Say more about that. This idea that it has already had this tremendous influence on your body of work. Where are the other places that now that we know that, if we go back and re-listen, we'll be able to hear it?
Well, the most obvious, I think you could probably, and I don't think that anything's overtly, but you might be able to catch something. I mean, I probably listened to that song, Esclavo y Amo by Los Pasteles Verdes. That's probably the song in my top 5 songs I've listened to in all my life. And that includes music that I've been listening to since I was a kid. I just heard that song so much that all those sounds, I mean, are just kind of ingrained in me at this point. So, I think say the most obvious place you could probably poke around and probably find some influence would be in the Black Pumas debut album. It was just such an important, like, formative musical experience for me when I discovered it.
I think one of the things I love about the way you're talking about all of this is that you're helping us to remember that notion of genre in music is actually quite blurred. That feeling of like, wait a minute, is this a hip hop? Is this a ballad? Like, what's happening here? How valuable is it for us, or is it at all valuable to segment what we think music is into genre versus really being in tune sonically to how the genres are influencing each other.
I grew up on the border of U.S. and Mexico in South Texas. I kind of grew up going back and forth between Mexico and the U.S. Going to Mexico was not a huge, like, grab your passport kind of thing. It was just like getting the car, drive 10 minutes to go see your grandmother. You know, I'd spend like half my time in Mexico, half my time in the U.S. and, you know, listen to Mexican music on the radio. And then I would listen to hip hop music on MTV. And also, it's just like a culture down there where it's not quite Mexican. It's not quite American. And everybody's speaking freely speaking English and Spanish back and forth to each other. You can walk in somewhere speaking English and they'll speak Spanish back to you and vice versa. So those boundaries of like genre and language and things like that just kind of like didn't exist for me growing up. I'm not fazed at all by two different cultures and sounds or musics and languages, whatever. So I think that always influenced me in that I'm just not as fazed by it as a lot of people are. I do think it's fascinating with this music, you know, with this sound that came about like in the late 60s, early 70s, is that, you know, yesterday my taxi driver was from Senegal, and he was just talking about jazz music and American jazz music. But nowadays it's so easy to be connected via the internet and a kid anywhere around the world. And it's beautiful that a kid in wherever can completely get into music from another part of the world via Spotify, YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. But you think about back then, for that influence to have crept into music, they couldn't just find Pink Floyd on Spotify or 13th Floor Elevators or whatever psychedelic music, and they couldn't find Al Green. I mean, that was not easy for a band in Chile or Peru to, you know, you had to get the record. I mean, it's just fascinating to me that dots from around the world were connected way back then when it was much harder to do so. And it makes you realize like how much the power of music to kind of bring people together, and those boundaries can be blurred. I mean, I get that genres kind of help people find things. So if you walk into a record store and if there were no genres, I totally get that it would be impossible to find the Duke Ellington record versus the Pink Floyd record, because you kind of have to go. So I absolutely get it. At the same time, I think it's important to not be completely boxed in by things like that.
I want to know a little bit more about the nitty-gritty of actually making this in the context of not being able to be in person as you were developing it. How did the distancing of the pandemic affect making this project?
I don't think anybody, maybe at the very, very end in 2021, did I have somebody actually come into the studio and play some stuff, but this was completely done remotely. I'm actually personally used to working alone a lot, so I'm not totally always fazed by it. However, there is something really special when people can get in a room and make some music together. You know, but I think everybody was home. You know, I knew that. That was the one thing with this, making this album, was like nobody was on tour. There were a few artists who were busy working on their own albums, but everybody was home. So it was like everybody was able to record. And nowadays, everybody has a way of recording. You know, if they don't have a studio, they have a laptop or a friend with whatever. You know, I think in a way, I kind of was conceptually thinking like, well, it kind of maybe adds to the isolation, the feeling of some of the music, is that like none of us were ever in the same room making this. It was just completely done remotely. So it's a very unique way to kind of do things, because I mean, not anymore. I mean, everybody, you know, can record and email parts around now, but I kind of felt like it maybe added a little bit to some of the isolation or the sadness or the themes. On the other hand, it can be a little bit of a technical nightmare to mix it and make it all sound cohesive. I definitely had to nudge a couple of vocalists. I remember mailing one singer a preamp to make it sound better. I was like, can I send you something? Because it just doesn't sound great in your closet. So some people went to a studio, a real studio, like a big studio. Some people had a good setup at home. Some people didn't. So that presented a little bit of a challenge to then make it sound cohesive and good. And, you know, and that's all technical stuff that probably 75% of people won't notice. But that was probably the hardest thing at the end, was mixing it and making it sound like I wanted to. But just conceptually, I think it kind of added a little bit to what was happening musically and, you know, vibe wise on the record. And I'm pretty used to, I can work for days and days on end by myself.
NPR Music has described this as timeless and cinematic. What ways is this project theatrical, and maybe a bit more theatrical than some of your previous projects?
There's a lot of drama to the music, themes of kind of heartbreak and romance and love. And at some point we kind of like threw away the rule book and just kind of ran with it. I had this playlist of inspiration songs that I would send to everybody. But at some point I actually just stopped listening to it and was like, I think if I'm going to be doing some original music, it's already in me. Let's just see what I can come up with. And but yeah, like thematically, I think some, the vocals and everything is so dramatic in what we're talking about. I kind of imagine this whole thing also playing out, like there's instrumental songs on the album, and I thought it would be kind of like nice little intermissions to all, you know, it's almost like theater and you have a little tiny intermission to go get your glass of wine or your popcorn or whatever you have to do to set the mood. And yeah, I kind of heard it playing out all like that, like almost like a drama piece or something.
What's next for you?
New Black Pumas record. Mm-hmm. I have a whole instrumental album that I did, and at the moment it's just a kind of a lot of touring with Black Pumas. We still have a lot of touring to fulfill, and constantly at the moment I haven't had a lot of time in the studio, unfortunately, because of our touring schedule. So we'll see what something will inspire something, I'm sure.
Was it feeling good to be back with Black Pumas?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm very much kind of a studio rat, and without getting too woe is me, wah wah, like I was an only child, so I could, you know, like I said, with about being by myself for days. I'm kind of an introvert by nature, studio rat. I can just kind of not talk for a few days, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, being on tour is kind of exhausting for somebody like me. But I would say that the pandemic really put everything into perspective where, like, I will never take touring and the opportunity to do this around the world and have people sing these songs. I'm talking about Black Pumas back to us, even though they might not speak the language. I'll never take that for granted again. It's just an incredible opportunity to do this. And it really gave me that perspective, was what I needed to be like, I will never complain about touring again. This is incredible. And I have this new perspective on it where I just really, really like it. I wish I had more time in the studio, but I can, you know, I'm rolling with a laptop and a microphone always. Although the touring schedule, a day off sometimes is like, we're lucky if we get out of the hotel room to go get coffee and get a couple of phone calls in. So there is that side of it, but I just love playing with Black Pumas. Eric has really just reinvigorated this appreciation for live performance, and our band is amazing and just a great group of people to travel with too.
Adrian Quezada, thank you so much for joining The Takeaway.
Hey, thanks for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.